stop me working. It's been recording, I'm not playing back. But Terry was telling me that the custom here at the Institute of Physics Publishing is that when people go to the States, they come back with an iPod for members of your team. Because in UK we bring back chocolates, but Terry was saying that loads of people here have an iPod, is that right?
Yeah,
sort of. So, wait, I shouldn't have told everybody, but it's just your team members you get iPods.
Now
but,
I'm
so, How many people have an iPod, by the way? How many people have been recording and or podcasting? You know?
Podcatching.
Pardon?
I've been podcatching.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing about whether you're the subject or the object of doing all of those things. So, yeah. So we'll not listen to any Adam Curry here for obvious reasons. Okay, that's great. So this talk is pretty similar to the one that I gave at the UKSG, and it's more focusing on the publishing side of things. So I'll give an introduction and then why we need to address the whole issue about news dissemination, how RSS is a solution for this dissemination of news, various ways of viewing RSS and then creating RSS, and then how RSS is such a great lightweight technology. It's been used in all kinds of interesting ways, including the podcasting. So that's going to be the, oh, isn't all this great, sort of geeky, it's going to change the world. But in reality, we know there's a whole lot of downsides and caveats and, you know, issues of trust and technical issues and standards wars and blah, blah, blah. So I'll give a couple of caveats and then sort of speculate for how things might develop in the future. And then perhaps at the end, you know, we'll switch off the recording device and have a bit of a chat about what it means to your organisation. How you might build on things. So if we have any brief questions as we go along, feel free to ask, but we'll have the general discussion at the end. And you should all have a copy of the PowerPoint. So a bit about me. My job title is UK Web Focus. This is a web advisory post, funded by GISC to support the higher and further education communities, and for the past 2 years almost by the Museums, Libraries and Archives Council to support that cultural heritage community. And I've been involved in doing web stuff since January 1993, when I was at Leeds and we set up the first web service, institutional web service in the UK. We used to say a web year was like 7 ordinary years, so that makes me an old age pensioner on the web and I should retire. I'm also the GISC representative on W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, the body responsible for developing web standards. And it's one organisation, one vote. So GISC is a member and I have the vote, and Microsoft is a member. So we're as powerful as Microsoft. I was expecting to have all the bribes coming in my direction, but no, it's me. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Was a joke. I was talking to Terry about the problems with recording. You can crack a joke in a small environment like this, and it's taken out of context. So I reserve the rights to edit. So I'm based at UConn, which is a national centre of expertise in digital information management, which is located at the University of Bath, just down the road. So that's a bit about me. Oh, I've left this slide in. Where do you all work? So forget that first thing. So what do you know about news feeds? How many people say, yeah, well, I know about news feeds because I kind of read them in some way, and I know I'm reading them? Anybody? 4, 5, okay, about a third. And how many are involved in the creation of news feeds? So, again, it's the same group of people. And some people, they might be doing it, but it's also seamless that you don't know. And that's fine, and that's how it's intended to be used. So how many are doing the sort of hardcore, read all the specs, doing the Perl code, etc., etc.? Okay, yeah. How many people are saying, what's RSS? Kind of come because they've heard it's cool, or you fancy the morning off from work and you've come into this seminar and you don't know what it's about. Well, you all know a bit about it. How many knows what it stands for? Okay, so how many people have a smile on their face when they know they're not going to respond to that because it's a trick question? How many people knew that was a trick question? Okay. I'll explain why it's a trick question a bit later on. You'll notice I haven't defined RSS at this point, is what you normally do. I'll move away from that. These were all the things from last time. So what is a You know, you will want to do. You know, you're doing all this great stuff, and you know, you've got all this great content, and you want everybody to know about it. You want to sort of disseminate news about what you're doing, news that's changing. You want to get all the new table of contents for the new publications out. So all the things we do, we enhance our services in different ways, enhance our websites and email lists and etc. etc. We run mailing lists and spam mailing lists, and we contribute to Gistmail and everything else. And we run events and we participate events, and we have stands at UKSG and online information, and we have websites and we do things, and we want other people to put our great things on their websites, etc. etc. And that's all part of a, you know, fairly bog standard marketing function. You know, in a technical view of that marketing function. And we know there are limitations with all of those things. You know, we've got to enhance our website, and somebody says, well, we've got to go down an open source route, or, you know, we want this technology, or we want to go down a semantic web or RSS, and there's all those conflicts as to what's the, there's all those potentially good things, but what's the killer way to go for, you know? So there's that question. Mailing lists. Yes, young people, there was a survey carried out of students, and students don't read email anymore. Students, there was a quotation that say, students regard email as full of spam, boring and full of spam, and not where the action is. And what they want is instant messaging and SMS. So students regard email as I regard Usenet news. Stop using it, it's not workable anymore. So there's a problem there. So email problems. We run events, but not everyone attends because they've all gone to the pub or whatever. And we do things and not everybody reads. And we ask people, here's some great news that I've got. Can you put it on the website? And there's a bottleneck, and, you know, it's time-consuming to do. And this whole thing about email and newsletters, whether it's conventional or web-based, in a way, there's little user choice in providing different ways for the user in which they might want to process that information. So there's some of the problems. This is where, so really what we want to do is to minimise human bottlenecks in processing third-party information for use on the web and in other types of environments, whilst allowing users more flexibility in their way of managing resources. So we want to do something, but we also want to provide users with flexibility. So my first provocative statement, let's kill email. If email was invented today, would it take off? So you've got this great new protocol, and anybody can post to it, and they can spoof IDs and things, and blah, 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 and 50% of it is likely to be sort of all Viagra spam. Wouldn't take off. You know, so in many ways, email is flawed, and, you know, as I was saying, young students appear to be reacting against it. But we're all familiar with it, and we all use it, and we all get twitchy when we're away from home and want to read our email. But if we reflect on some of the limitations with email, I'll be getting one in about 2 hours' time. No, I've just missed it. There'll be an email sent out saying, anybody fancy going for a coffee? And I shouldn't see that. You know, I'm not around. I don't want to go away for 2 weeks and have one of those going out for coffee. That's your time out. And I've got to process the good stuff with the spam stuff. And email is really, was developed for interaction. And a lot of email is used for broadcasting. And metadata, does anybody change the subject line and use appropriate subject lines? And that's a little bit of metadata you can use with email. And we all know, with the, you know, our profession, importance of metadata, and email is fairly poor with it. And users, it all comes in the same stuff, the social stuff, and, you know, works of normal things, and greater customization. When you're away from holiday, you can survive without 2 weeks of the news alerts from your favourite sort of sports channel, you know, or whatever. So, problems with email. But it's still there, we will continue to use it. So let's look at how we can, the initial developments to address some of those limitations of email. So, I don't know when it was the BBC first came out with their ticker tape. quite a while ago, and that's still on my desktop, so it's a scrolling ticker tape. And they also had a mechanism by which you could add up to your own website a bit of JavaScript to pull BBC News and embed that BBC News in your own website. And this is great because it gives the user choice. When they go away for 2 weeks' holiday, they're not inundated with all that information, etc., etc. That was good, initial attempt. But there were some accessibility problems. There's a JavaScript dependency. It was a proprietary, but the big thing was it was a proprietary solution. So if everybody else wanted to do the same thing, they'd have to develop their own software and own format for doing these things, and there'd be another sort of loads of different ticker tape for each provider, and that was obviously not the way. So this showed, a solution, but there was a clear need for an open solution which would allow us to all to use standard authoring tools and environments and reuse the same viewers for content from lots of different people. And then along come RSS, and we were all happy because we had this standard. And wasn't it great? And the standard was originally developed by Netscape for when Netscape was going to take over the world. Does anybody old enough to remember that? So they had the My Netscape portal, and what you had was they were saying it's a portal and anybody can contribute content to that. So there was my own stuff, and there was a weather I got from a weather service and used from the BBC or whatever, you pull it all together, and RSS was invented for that. And people said, this is really great. This is really good. We could use it for a lot more than just to support the Netscape portal. So we started to build other things independent and Netscape on it. And then blogging came along, and the blogging community thought, this is really great. To be able to get news about new blog articles in somebody else's website, that's really good as well. So the blogging community said, yeah, RSS is at the core of what we're doing. And loads of tools were developed. So my colleague, Andy Powell, said, yeah, RSS is great. It should be the key alerting mechanism within the JISC's information environment. And this is all when a new journal is available, a table of contents is available, RSS will be the mechanism for doing that type of alerting. So we have a great lightweight solution which addresses many of the problems with the email approach. And then so people started to write viewers. So my colleague, so we've got one here, and this is just a trivial CGI script which goes and gets the file and converts it to HTML. So all of this stuff here is the news, and you've got an XML file, and you can embed that on your own stuff. So we have lots of different ways of viewing. So we have that scrolling ticker tape at the top, in which I can choose my favourite providers of RSS. We have the web page, we have pop-up alert, some bookmark interfaces, and email interfaces. So let me, at the top there was another, that was, the notice board, the for sale items at Bath University that I can have as a ticker tape. Or we can have her as a pop-up alert. So one of the problems people say, initially when they thought that RSS was just about embedding content in websites, they thought, but that needs to come to me. But it can come to you. So I have a little pop-up alert and says, 44 new items. So we're addressing that need for the in-face as well as to go to the information. And there's another type of pop-up alert down here, and I can configure this every half hour, tell me, or every 2 days or whatever, pop up and tell me what's new from the various things I've subscribed to. Or there are various readers which kind of look like email. And I think from an obvious user's point of view, we'd say, well, this is just another email, and instead of all my folders up there, just my folders down there. So people are happy with the email interface. And they can say, there's an email style of doing these things. So lots of different ways of viewing that, giving the user choice or giving the institution choice to decide its preferred way of doing things. And so there are things on the user's desktop. And there's also a need to provide these things, these aggregators, within an organisation. So typically this might be the university library. We'll say, here are all of these physics publications and journals. So initially it might be links to things, and then it might be the alerts and the table of contents. And those can be aggregated in different ways. So if we go to Nature and IOPP, etc., etc., and bring those things together in a way that makes sense for initially the individual, but now we're talking about the organisation or the subject librarian can pull that information together. And it's not just links to a page, it can be the actual content itself. So we can have these server-based RSS aggregators. So wouldn't it be nice if all the funding bodies provided, you know, an RSS feed for funds? So one of the things, you know, every academic does is looking for funds. And what we get at the moment from our research support unit is an email, you know, which says there's new funds available, or a memo, a paper memo, or whatever. And then we have to go and navigate our own way down the routes. But if every, if the EU and JISC and the research councils, etc., etc., provided that information with a bit of keyword which says it's funding about physics, then that could all be pulled together. So there could be a single point of content for physics funding opportunities, and not just the links to somewhere and we don't know when it times out. So it's that type of approach that people are very interested in. And so I will mention one particular aggregator that was developed at EVIL. People familiar with EVIL, the RDN, Subject Gateway Engineering, at Heriot Watt University. So this was developed. And so what we have here is an aggregation, an RSS aggregation service about all of the news from the JISC services. So it's the MIMAS and ADEMAS of the world and RDNs of the world, together with the JISC advisory service such as UCOM and CTIS and TECDIS and OSWATCH and the like. So they have a bit of software, server-side software, which is going around and registered all the JISC services, and we say, here's the address for RSS files, and then it provides this, the users with an interface to this information. So here I've gone up to the top and selected JISC News, and was at the main JISC News, or I can scroll down and say to the EVIL section, and get. So it's a consistent user interface to access the information for all of those diverse information providers in a sort of in a similar way. So I'm not having to follow links over to EVIL and then a different user interface on their website. So pulling all of those things together, and then we have the UCOM one. So there's an example. I should say I'll consistently mention, I might mention a particular application. I'm not endorsing any particular application, and there are several of these available. There's one called Urchin, which is another open source one, but this is available. Rod EVIL have said that they would be willing to make the software available. They don't have any effort to support it, but in a way there might be advantages in people getting together and pooling in effort. That's one. So that's a quick overview of why RSS was needed, some of the ways in which an end user can benefit from accessing this information. So now I'll give the sort of simple view of what's it look like then in this RSS. And one of the great things about RSS, it's powerful, but it's lightweight. And anyway, it's powerful because it's lightweight. It was easy for lots of people to get involved and do all of these tools. So you might define your channel. So there's a BBC channel. BBC has loads and loads of RSS channels. And here's one which describes this as the main UK news channel. And then we have little chunks like this for all other news items. And so you can see a title and a link to the full article, and that's it. So we can all conceptually understand that. Incidentally, can anybody see anything sort of a bit strange about the content of that news item? Now, you might wish it's true, but actually I've changed some of the words. It actually did say Claire Short quit over Iraq, and Claire Short quit the cabinet accusing Tony Blair of breaking his promises. So one of the big the things I'll be mentioning is there's an issue about trust here. And we know, particularly in terms of the BBC, that trust is a big issue and people lost their jobs and somebody was killed over it. So there is a big issue, but we know the BBC. You know, so the BBC is a trustworthy organisation, but there's an issue about, you know, people are receiving our content. This content is provided by IOPP. You know, what's that? that will mean something from the library coming on the table for others, what will it mean? So there is going to be an issue about trust, which we'll need to discuss a bit later on. Because with RSS, it's a mechanism for allowing third parties to contribute to your website without any control. Now, I suspect within your environment, the relationships between publishers and libraries, there is that feeling of trust, your professional bodies. Within a university environment, if we've got sort of postgrad students who are doing this and maverick sort of... the UK higher education community is a similar trusted environment, but there might be some communities in which this is not the case. I'll switch that thing on. So I think you get the point that there is that issue about trust and the potential dangers. So we want to author some stuff. How do we do it? You can do it by hand. How many people do it by hand? No. Do you ever? Well, I must admit, I copy some stuff and paste it because I'm not a Perl hacker and should do it in an automated way. But don't, because you'll make mistakes and it's blah blah blah. So there are dedicated RSS authoring tools, you know, desktop tools. There are web-based tools that you can use for doing things. As I say, blogs and RSS go together like a horse and carriage. And here's an example from Sausage, the social sciences gateway. It's just down the road, and they have a blog. And this looks like just a website thing, all the new things they're doing. But I've actually developed this primarily as a mechanism of generating the RSS file, because an RSS file comes out in the watch. Most blog tools will just create RSS for them, so didn't need to do anything special. Or you can generate your RSS and your HTML from your backend database. Is that how you do things? So if you've got this structured database, and I think that's, you know, in your environment, because you'll be using that metadata in loads and loads of different ways for all your catalogues and RSS feeds and news alerts and table contents alerts and everything. So, you know, in a way, if you've got all of that structured information, this is just a simple report that should come off, I'm guessing. Or you can transform your HTML or XHTML to RSS, or the other way around. Yeah, so there are other ways of doing things. Or your RSS could be managed and provided by a third-party service. So you can go off and some third-party does this transformation, does magic things for you, so there's, you know, the gigs and degrees and all of those things. So there's lots of different ways of doing these things. So here's one example that was developed by my colleague Andy Powell, RSS Express. And this was really developed to support the GIST community in doing RSS. So myself and Andy back in 1990 were saying RSS is great. And it took a few years before there was really the momentum that there is now. So in some ways there'll be lots of other ways of doing these things, but this was one of the early ones and still used. And it's you can register your RSS feed, or you can edit one or view one, or there's a link to a third party validation service, but you can see here, and I was talking to Andy just 2 days ago about various ways in which we can enhance this tool. We're doing things such as OPML, which I'll talk about a bit later on. So an example of a tool, and so you just fill in the form. So from one point of view, you don't need to know that you're doing RSS. Say people are just filling in a form. That form can then go into your content management system, can go out to RSS, and as a person creating that data, they don't need to know about all the magic formats behind the scenes. So when you've created, when you decide you're going to have it, and you're going through this, and you save your file at a stable location. So we know all about the problems about broken 404 pages, and the last thing you want is this scrolling ticker tape which says no BBC news today because they've reorganised the website and got a different content management system and all the links are broken, and it's everybody who's got an RSS tool that's all broken. So please give some thought to the stable location for your resources. Validate, because this is XML and validation is important. Broken news is bad news, and then there's a whole line type issues. Include a link so that I'll demonstrate in a minute. How many people know about the Firefox dynamic bookmarking tool? And isn't it great? And why don't why hasn't everybody else? Haven't you told them how great it is? I'll give a sale.
Okay,
great. I'll demonstrate that later. And then, so you've got your RSS feed, and in a way, I think there's still a need to promote and market that, and put it up in register it at various places. And I think one of the things is because there are so many different ways of in which RSS can be viewed, there's probably a need to get a feel for how it looks. And in a way, this is going back to the what does your web page look like in Firefox or Internet Explorer. But there's an issue here about the writing style. You might think, if you think your RSS file is just going to be embedded in another web page, and you might think, oh, that's great. But I've got an RSS reader on my iPod, and that's a different way, that's a different interface, and there are issues about how it will work if it's on a scrolling, is the text too long? And this is going back to discussions I was having with Terry about the writing style, the short, snappy, sort of punchy news that might be needed for this type of thing, which in a way is possibly alien to the traditional professional approach we have of sort of writing style. So maybe we do need the tabloid writer for this type of thing. And once we're on the basis. So go through that mechanism. So some of the other ways in which you can view your RSS, the type of things that we can do. So you can view your email using an RSS reader. Anybody do that? No? I'm ahead of you. So you'll notice down here that there are all of these Firefox extensions. So the one here is my Gmail account. How many people have a Gmail account? So Gmail is Google's email, and it was an invitation only, so you need to know somebody who's got an account, and then add your number to it, buy your pound, so you give me one. And then you've got this really good email interface. I think it is really good, and in a way it's kind of interesting in what we're seeing here is this first move, is a move from away from the desktop application to the webtop application. So it can be interesting in thinking about those things. But one of the things I would say is, here I've got a little utility which logs on for me and tells me down here. And when I click on this, or I can bookmark this, so I can go to my normal email, or I can open here and see all of my email messages. So I can be in a web browser anywhere, and if I want to read my email, my Gmail, I can just go bookmarks, show me things that are there. So we're actually pulling together this email and RSS, because RSS, as I was saying, is a kind of news alerting, and email is a news alerting type mechanism. So in a way, we can see it coming together. What else have we got here? And this is where you should also, your thing when you're creating RSS is to have this link, so that you have a machine understandable way of defining the location of the file, as opposed to a human. Typically, you might have a little XML icon, and as an end user, you might say, that's a great thing I want to subscribe to, and you drag that into your RSS file. So a human will recognize that, but a computer won't. So with a link tag, the computer will recognize all of the different RSS tags. Let me illustrate that. Anybody recognise this page? This looks really good. Done a bit of writing. So what we've got down here, somebody's missing out on all cool extensions. So down here, we've got this little orange icon, which is the internationally agreed standards, which is intuitively obvious to not a single person anywhere, that something good is going to happen if I click on this. So what we've got here is a load of RSS somewhere around, I'm guessing. Right, so here we can say, if I'm interested in jobs in optics or whatever, I will drag that, you see it's got XML, over to my favourite tool, and as a human I can do that. But but we can also, because it's defined in this simple way, you can click here and I can say, I want to subscribe
to this optics thing, and I put it in my bookmark, so I hope I'm not screwing anything up for anybody. So if I go away from this page, I can now go into bookmarks, and I can go here, and you see it dynamically pulls in these things. So this is called a dynamic bookmark. So rather than bookmarking to a page, a static page, it's dynamically pulling in all of the contents of that field. And so you can see how simple and easy it is. And you could also have these install that scrolling toolbar and have, you know, that ticker tape display of all of those interesting things. So it's providing those users with a richer way of doing things. So the thing I have is on the bulletin board of things that students are selling at that. When it comes up to the end of the academic year, loads of overseas students are about to flog off all their tellies and electronic gear and blah, 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 cheap. So I can have this scrolling thing and say, some poor student just bought a new iPod and it was stolen on the first day, so they had a load of accessories to sell. So I got the sad story, but it wasn't.
I paid slightly over the odds for it. Okay.
That's why this is where Firefox is so potentially important. It's a really cool fast browser. It's extensible, and there are lots of interesting things that can be added. So these other things, is it here? No, not this one. Are things that it will give a bit of information when there's a Creative Commons license associated with the resource, and you know, etc., etc. So increasingly, particularly within the higher education community, we're all going down the Firefox's great route. So there might be some issues about how would that tie in with, you know, with what you want to provide and how you provide it. And Thunderbird, email client. No, it's actually not as good. It's in the Firefox stable, open source email client. And what you can do is subscribe here to your favorite feed. So this is just going to the, I prefer the email interface. So you get an email view of the stuff. So that's just about traditional email with a bit of filtering into particular sort of folders. But it's spam free. So currently, RSS has been described as authenticated spam-free opt-in email. So did anybody get the spam? I think, was it from, apparently from the BBC, to say it was something to do with Princess Diana, or there was some spam going around, and it was
a secret report.
It was the secret report. Yeah. How many of those messages did you get? Oh, I got about four or five. That's an example. You think it's from the BBC, and it's the, you know, front field has been spoofed and it's spam. But here, you know, it's authenticated, spam free, and it's opt-in. I've chosen to go to whatever those things are. And so if I try and filter things from the BBC, I could get that spam from people who've spoofed it. But we've not got that. I know that this is okay. Currently, there's no RSS spamming yet. I don't know whether it's happening. And then we have all of the mobile devices. So something I didn't bring it with me. With your Palm or Pocket PC, there are tools. I've got one called Plucker. So on my desktop machine, I can say automatically get these RSS files and then plonk them on my Palm, iPod, Pocket PC, other devices beginning with the letter P, phone, you know, whatever. So you can say, well, the other interesting thing I discovered is that you can say in the tools, give me the RSS and harvest the page beneath it. And then you get the headline plus the proper article. Whereas if you try and harvest the BBC News page and one page beneath it, you get all of the adverts and all of the other things. So RSS becomes the simple page, which has just the one link, the proper stuff, and then you get the proper stuff. So it can be a better way of doing that sort of pulling in the content. So that's kind of the overview of the technology and how it can be used. Before I went to UKSG, I was having a look around, and somehow I found you guys, so you must be Google friendly, because I was
was just doing publishers, RSS, UK, found a few ones. So what you've got on, we had an app page, it was all of these things. So this is to illustrate when we're talking about news, it can be used for lots and lots of different purposes. And what is RSS? Is it really simple syndication? We'll have that discussion shortly. And you might say, well, hang on, why have I still got the old version when there's obviously this cool new version and there's bits that all the old audience is still on RSS 1.0, but it's more complex than that, which I'll talk about. But we might need to think about the message that we need to the users about all of this. What were the libraries doing? So I had a similar look around, and particularly in the US on the Web for Lib list. I don't know if anybody's on the Web for Librarians list. And they're all really big on RSS, and the blogs and you know, those type of technologies. So I did a search, and this was the Hennepin County Library, that well-known leading library over in the US, is big on RSS, and so it's all the subject guide and library news and all of the rest of those things. So just an ordinary library somewhere in who knows where. I apologise for anyone from Hennepin County Library who's listening and needs me today. And examples of various tools that you can use to access this information. And incidentally, looking at the URL, when I moved over, as you can see it here, you can see it's a CoFusion script which is going away with some backend interface and pulling it all in. So this illustrates a sensible approach, is just using the content management system and pulling the stuff in rather than doing it all by hand. But what happens when they said CoFusion isn't where it's at anymore and we have to upgrade, and so there's a problem there that everybody's desktop tool and linking things will break. So I think really, you know, the pulling it in dynamically is sensible from one point of view, but the exposing the tools used to do that is not. So there needs to be a really different approach to doing this. So that's all the RSS for the mainstream. We've got some news, we've got some journals, you know, we've got some events. What else can it be used for? And I think in a way, there's a bit of a problem with saying RSS is news. Because RSS can be general syndication. So you might have some static stuff, like the address of where this building is. And you want everybody around the world to be able to take that content and include it on the website. But if you change it, then that changes will be reflected everywhere. So this is syndication and not necessarily what's new. So general content and communication. And then all of the dynamic stuff. So give me the, on my scrolling ticket tapes, let me know when there's something new added to the search query on sort of cyclotron, you know, accelerators in blah, blah, blah. There's the personalised interfaces that we saw, which is where it came from initially, from the my.yahoo, tracking items for sale. So what you're really interested in is that elusive ticker for Glastonbury that pops up on eBay. And you don't want to go there all the time, you want it to come to you to say that that's available. It is, of course, illegal to sell tickets for Glastonbury. So, again, I was doing another look, and this was taken from RSS in government. Now, which government might that be? Oh, it might be the US government. It doesn't need to classify. But here was an example. PubMed is PubMed on steroids. So you do a search for whatever, and you get this RSS feed generated from, you know, the back-end search interface, spits out as a bit of RSS. And it was interesting because they were saying that this whole thing was being integrated with the blog. So as well as the news, people could chat about such things as well. And this was kind of the integration. Shared annotates, etc., etc. So here, search results, and a link to a feed for those search results. And I guess in a way, would it be sensible to do some OPML around that as well? No, I need to think. I'll explain OPML shortly. And then, as I say, this link with a blogger, rather. So, you know, I mentioned syndication, tracking. One of the examples that you find when you read about this is the, what's it called, parcel force. So you go to the parcel force and you say, here's my, you know, unique code. And you plug that in and it says, here's an RSS feed. So on your scrolling ticker tape, it will say, your luggage is now in Singapore. And you might be anywhere around the world and you'll know when that's coming from you. So that type of tracking interface and the whole personalised interface that we're familiar with. And so, you know, yes, you do get RSS feeds for the mother, and you do get RSS feeds for stocks and chairs, and for, you know, TV guides, etc., etc. So here was another interface. So I showed you the Firefox dynamic bookmarking for instant email. There is also an RSS aggregator tool called Sage that you can use with Firefox. So I can say, here are my bookmarks. And then down here, I can see the headline, which is what I saw in the Firefox in the live bookmarks. But I can also see, and this is held locally, aggregated locally, a brief summary. And then I click on those and go over to Gmail. So locally, I've got that type of stuff. So again, we had this issue about the style and the interface and the writing style for your RSS. So I hope what you can see is it's not just a way of embedding information in a website. There are loads and loads of different ways. And this makes it a real challenge for us when we're saying, right, when you're creating your RSS content, you need to think that it might be used in all of these different ways. And so what happens if something is truncated there? And, you know, the top news item is IOPP has announced a deal to blah blah and he missed it out, or and it's the big knot or whatever is missed out. So it might be that has that partial information. What are the dangers in that partial information? So possibly that type of thing to look at in terms of the writing style and the approaches to writing RSS. Amazon? Anybody heard of Amazon? So of course, because Amazon opened up its APIs, people are doing interesting things with the Amazon data. So here is one, generate a URL that you can use to search with your favorite news. So you just go to this old website, go into the search phase, and it says, give me a feed. So then you get your scrolling or whatever and say, this is the information about those Amazon resources on that. So this is kind of interesting because we're now getting this mixed economy. So we can say, here are all these interesting things which you could be doing with your RSS. But could other people, and should other people, and is this great? Is this great for Amazon, because they're providing those APIs, then other people, the libraries are saying, there's all this dynamic search results, and then people ultimately buy something from Amazon. And so you could argue it's good for Amazon that other software developers are, you know, routing traffic.
If you get a referral, you can actually make some cash.
And you can make some cash depending on that business model, yeah. Or should it be, no, this is our information, and we can manage it that nothing else can touch our APIs or scrape things, and, you know, we can have copyright notices to say you shouldn't do this. So do you want to say, yeah, try out these things and we encourage you to, or no, we want to protect things because there might be a potential danger and that will undermine our business model, etc., etc. So there's not a simple answer to that, but, you know, there are advantages in the tight control and opening things up. And there's another thing about that was a price watch. So I would imagine there was a similar thing for eBay, which is tell me when there's an iPod for sale for less than a particular price, and you get an RSS alert for those things. So this was the search. Oh, this was the dynamic search for Amazon for anything in RSS. And so that can scroll and go to the dynamic, etc., etc. And then you could add on the extra conditionals, any book that's cost between such and such, and all of those things. That all could be done either by you or by third parties. And this was the price change. So this was going to another website doing it. And it's interesting, as you've mentioned here, that one of the issues about can you do this and can you legitimately build things there as opposed to have a play, are going to be these rights issues. And this is, in a way, where something like Creative Commons may have a role to play. So clearly there are all those big issues which you're all, I'm sure, aware of the open access and the business model and whether it's, you know, the role of the publishers and the threats and et cetera, et cetera. But that issue is not just about the content. It can be about the metadata as well. So it may be that you say Creative Commons rights available for the metadata, for the table of contents and for all of that stuff, but you know, the actual content itself is owned by you, but to be perhaps explicit about giving Creative Commons and maybe opening up APIs could be good, because it could mean that other people can do your development work for you, which might be the libraries. So it might be you want the libraries in order to do this, so that from their point of view, they've got this feeling of ownership that they, those techies in the libraries, are getting all of this Institute of Physics stuff, you know, and it's wrapped around, and there can be their value-added services around it. And they're thinking they're doing something great, and you don't mind the loss of branding, because the big thing you're about is, you know, getting the content to them. So that was that type of price watch. So there's some of the you know, good things and potential for it. A few more minutes left. Some of the quality issues. There's an example. I just had a look around some publication, and it was, you know, the dodgy character. And yes, we do get the dodgy characters, and I'm sure we've seen them all when there's email sent around, and it's the price for this conference is only $35,000. For some reason, the $8, you know, because a pound sign gets, you know, all messed up. So you will need to ensure that, you know, you've got proper XML characters, and this can be a problem when people are copying from a Word document and pasting into a form those Word SL Windows characters, which will be corrupted over here. So there's a need for characters, and there's a need to think about some special characters. And the other thing I would say is the need to avoid clever tricks. So there was some discussion somewhere about a limitation of RSS. Well, the strength of RSS is it's simple. A limitation of RSS is it simple. So you don't have that richer way of, you know, marking up stuff in bold and having extra links out from things. Now, there are tricks in which you can put that markup in by ampersand LTSM or, you know, all the escaping type things which you suspect you know about. And that might work when you're looking in a web browser, but will not probably not work if you've got scrolling ticker tape or one of these other tools. So this is where I'd say, you know, keep to the standard and to the spirit of the standard, because it might cause problems sort of downstream. We've then got this issue about you need to make sure your content is accurate, relevant, and truthful, and honest, and blah, 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 blah. And arguably, there might be a need for service level agreements to say what you're doing. And I received an email message 2 days ago from somebody at Vector, and they're looking for RSS to ship information about all courses and the like. And they're saying, you know, is anybody doing something about the trust issues? And she knocked up a bit quick. Vector agree that we'll create a stable URL for our resources, we will ensure that everything is valid, the content will be decent, vulnerable, true, you know, it will be in scope, we will ensure that time-based stuff is, you know, kept timely, etc., etc. So that was part of the, do we need to make some more a formal approach to our content, as opposed to, yeah, it's obvious we're going to be trusted, because from a library's point of view, might get trusted information from you, some other company, it's bought up, and then their RSS feeds suddenly become porn sites, and then you get porn automatically embedded. And the company was fine, it was just the name disappeared. So this might be where part of that agreement is, you will ensure that your domain name is trusted for a period of blah, blah, blah. So those type of issues, we've not hit those problems yet, but we know in the internet's a nasty place, and nasty people there, so we need to plan, because we are, you know, professional bodies providing professional services.
there's an issue about the context of the content. So for UConn, we're partly funded by JISC, partly by MLA. So we might say we're doing some great work for JISC, for MLA, and if that's automatically included in a JISC aggregator, it's why is this there? Or it could be, you know, where there's a bit of competition. Mimas and Adina might be competing for a service and one of them wins a contract and that's great for them, but not so good for the other service and they want to keep that quiet. And if Mimas have just won something from Adina and there's a reverse link and on their homepage it's, you know, the competition has just got something or other. So there's also that issue about that type of context of information, even if it is factual accurate, you might want to spin document. Okay, so just a few more slides to go. What does RSS stand for? Who knows? Right. And initially it stood for Rich Site Summary, and that was when Netscape invented it, and that was RSS 0.9. Then Netscape disappeared, and the standard disappeared, and there was real problems because everyone was built on it, and the DTD had disappeared, and the spec had disappeared. So it was we need proper standards bodies to do these things. So W3C said, RSS is great, and this ties in with our view of the world and doing semantic web stuff, and anything new that's about metadata should be using the RDF resource description framework. So RSS is great, we'll rebrand it so it stands for RDF Site Summary. So this was better RSS, which was extensible, and part of this thing called the semantic web, which I'm not going to talk about because it's complex, but it's has great potential. But then David Weiner and a couple of other guys said, no, RSS is semantic web and RDF is too hard and it's over-engineered and it will never take off. And what we want is something that's really nice and simple to keep the spirit of the simplicity. And we'll call it really simple syndication. And this is version 2.0. And there were the standards wars of a few years ago and they're still mumbling behind the scenes. So what we've got is the RSS 1.0 camp is the W3C semantic web camp. The RSS 2.0 is the lighter weight, let's do interesting things in a lighter way, and we don't really understand all this reification owl and stuff, and we'll steer clear from it. So there are two different things, and yes, everybody thinks that 2.0 is the latest version, but it's not, it's a completely different thing. JISC went for 1.0, that was Andy Powell, made that decision. That was before there was a 2.0, so it was an easy decision to make. I think we can all agree that really simple syndication from a branding point of view is great. RDF Site Summary is a really lousy acronym because it's recursive and nobody knows what it means. But which is the best? Is it the extensibility or is it the simplicity? Now, you could argue both. And we could all argue both. And at the moment, the jury's out. And I was hoping, you know, I read this book, which is a really good book, by the way, which explained the background behind some of the things that was happening. And I had a few pages about all the great things that's happening in 1.0, such as long syndication and chemical markup language, syndicating all of that stuff was an extension, and that might be relevant to you. E-government stuff. And I was thinking, oh, this is great. But I went to to some of those pages and some of the websites and they disappeared. Or it was just an idea and the application to implement that idea hasn't really happened. So I don't know. We don't know what's going on. So some of the interesting things that are happening, but some of them haven't really been developed. And there might be something new coming along as well. In fact, there might be two new things coming along, Atom and XHTML 2.0. And there was a meeting and news standards summit in Amsterdam last month that was organised by Reuters, Michel Wolf at Reuters. So if you follow this link, and there are these slides on my website, by the way, it will have all the papers. So this was partly the heavyweight news stuff that Reuters wants, but also there was something about the lightweight things. So basically, the jury's still out on, you know, which is the winner, and it might change to something new. But the important thing is to make sure it's lightweight and you know,
you can repurpose stuff from your content management system, which I suspect is what you're doing with 1.0 and 2.0, is it?
That's why we hedged our bets, because it's very easy just to create multiple versions of the content.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why, well, there might be a problem if you do it manually. I mean, at the moment, they're sufficiently alike each other that it can be transformed, but once you start to add in new stuff, it gets a bit of a problem. I've really covered those points. There are live analyzed web statistics, and similarly for RSS statistics. So once you start to say, well, how many people are accessing our resources via RSS, you might say, oh, it's great, there's thousands of them, and they're aggregators, you know, as opposed to people. So at the moment, the whole stats thing is a bit like the old web stats, and whether we need a counter, a project counter to address these things. I'm really pleased to say that, because I was involved in that group early days, so I was glad I managed to leave at appropriate time. So you can do things like putting a little icon, you know, so your logo that gets shipped around with them, you could make sure it's a logo that's associated directly with that thing and look at the hits on that. But then we want to standardise that so we can compare your approach to nature and all of those things. How many slides have I got? about five more slides. So I explained to you about shipping text type stuff around, and that might be dynamic text and other ways of doing things. So something that happened about a year ago was that Dave Weiner and Adam Curry was a former MTV DJ and has a professional, you know, and Dave Weiner was a geek who invented RSS 2.0, got together and says, when we ship all of these things along and we've got a logo that comes with it, that thing that comes with it could also be an MP3 file. And so we could take an iPod and we could automatically ship MP3 files so that people could register and say, here are my favourite MP3, you know, sound channels, radio shows or whatever. And when you do the sync overnight it downloads that large file. So when you go into work in the morning, you can listen to your new radio channel. And so Adam Curry is really promoting, popularising this, and it's back to the web in 10 years ago. It's all of the, this is setting the individuals free, and it's democratising radios. And the catch line is, transmitters, we don't need no stinking transmitters. So as blogs meant that we didn't need all the BBC and the newspaper, because anybody could create their own information, and this is going to transform society. Similarly, podcasting is going to transform and democratise radio. And once we go on to video casting, it'll transform. Everybody can make their own TV show. So there are a couple of simplistic, silly people who are arguing this. That's boring. You know, middle-aged people say, well, it's more complex than that. And there's all those issues about the production values, etc., etc. But potentially, it can be used simply. So, and it can be used in a learning context or a support type environment. So what am I doing here? So if this works, you know, I'll be talking and just using the device that I am to have, and it will be MP3, and I can just put it up on my website and wrap a bit of RSS around it and then syndicate that. So this talk could be on, you know, a million iPods tomorrow. People choose to do that. Or it could be on half a dozen people's iPods or whatever device that they choose. So it could be on your colleagues who couldn't make today because they've got an important meeting but are really interested in this. So we can do that time shifting, we can make it available to them. At no great cost, there's no great AV units have to come along and record it all, etc., etc. So in a way, it can be used to do that, to maybe to support the people who are on the road, do a lot of travelling, you know, Terry's away all the time, just on and off, but he misses all those exciting meetings. And so you could record all those exciting meetings and Terry could listen to them when he was away. And there are, so have people heard of the concept of podcasting? How many have never heard of it before? Okay, so so there's a lot of excitement about it at the moment, and the BBC is very interesting. So in a way, it'd be nice to say the Archers. You miss the Archers, and you can just say subscribe to the Archers, and it automatically appears, as opposed to having to set a recorder, you know, etc. etc. So there's a one thing. And then there was this really wacky thing that came out on the 5th of April. There was a mailing list set up which was all about using media, you know, in a library type context. And somebody had set up a text to computer synthesized voice podcast. So I could automatically sync and get the messages sent on a mailing list spoken to me in a computer voice. And my colleague Andy Powell said he couldn't imagine anything more boring to appear on an iPod. But then what he did the next day was he did the same thing for our own, because he was a developer and liked to do this. So there's open source tools, so you can take that and make it available. And you wouldn't listen to a novel. But I was thinking, what about those important alerts? So suppose I was, you know, about to go off to a conference, and there was a problem and the conference was cancelled or something, and you wanted to make that available, I might subscribe to the important alert from the conference, and that could be transformed into spoken. So in a way, it might be like a voice message getting through to this, a synthesized voice message. So potentially there might be some interesting applications, or it might be that dynamic. So I just sort of say, and it might be that Google has said to me, there is now, or eBay is saying to me, there is now one hit for your Glastonbury ticket available for under X pounds. And I think, well, I can cope with the voice because the information is important from there. Or it might be a really crazy idea. I don't know. Jury's out on that one. And then you can do everything with, do lots of things. So here was another RSS clients, and we can say syndicate cartoons and email and alerts and system alerts and lots of other things. And just so still under a lot of development, and just finally to say there are still some things happening with the standards. So ATOM has been proposed as a bringing together two competing camps. Proposal to merge RSS, and they're still having some discussions, but ATOM really came from the blogging camp. So a lot of the XML elements are all about articles and authors, you know, contributors, and it all, you know, you can see the blog behind the scenes, and they've started to reinvent the whole Dublin Core discussion. And some people are saying, don't have an author, have her as creator, so it can scale across, you know, that thing. But there is an argument that says, well, we're still talking about these things, why isn't the publishing community active in these discussions? You know, because I think all of this thing, you could say it's really key to what you're all doing. And if it's sufficiently important to you and other publishers, you should be engaged in the discussion. Grouping of RSS files. The BBC has hundreds of RSS files. Suppose you want to include those all in your favourite RSS tool. Or you've got one RSS tool and you want to export it into another RSS tool, how do you manage the groups? You manage the groups with OPML. And this is trivial. I did this by hand a few days ago when I was playing with my RSS. And ask who owns it, or ask for the spec, and it's Davey Weiner. So there's a big issue here that I'm trying to build these mission-critical, you know, services based on some crazy guy, and I've listened to his podcast, and he's a crazy guy. So in a way, we might say, we really want this whole thing to be standardised by all those boring committees and BS and ISO and all of those things. But if that happens, it wouldn't happen for a few years. So on the flip side, we've got the cool tools, but it's a bit of a flaky foundation. But they're still trying to work with RSS 1.0. So this is an interesting one. I was going to demonstrate it, but no time. So when you've got news, you might say, we've got an event. Well, we're speaking at UKSG. So in your RSS file, you can RSS 1.0 file, you can describe that an event with a bit of eight things. And then calendar could put my RSS file, not just say it's a bit of news, but that date is marked up, and you can say add this to my sort of favourite calendar. And this illustrates the benefit of the extensibility rather than the coolness of the 2.0. So potentially this is interesting, and there is a module for RSS 1.0 which is keywords, which is all PC. So you might say, give me all those RSS files associated with physics, and you know, you have your own classification schemes, but you can't do that with 1.0. So I think, you know, we can see the advantages in that extensibility, but we want it to take off, and we don't know if it's taken off yet. Atom stuff, our stuff, and you know, this is where I just created. It took five minutes to do the OpenML file, and you can go to that page and you can see what I did, and then I just dragged. What I did was I just right clicked on dragged, dragged it to an RSS to this particular viewer, and then it chunked up all of those things, so I didn't have to pull them all in manually. So I think that's something that you could usefully be doing for the libraries. But I don't think people know about OPML much yet, so there's also this educational need. So to conclude, RSS is cool and really important to you, but there are still some unresolved questions.
Questions?
Any questions?
I did have a couple of questions.
Let me just switch off, stop and fail.